Hello friends, this is Nitin and I welcome you to my startup podcast channel Jazair Audio, where we share real stories with real learnings. My guest speaker today is Pooja Terwar. Pooja is a recognized startup lawyer. She runs her own firm Pooja Terwar and Associates. She is also a mentor for change in Atal Innovation Mission. Hi Pooja, welcome to Jazair Audio and thank you for talking to us.
Same, your pleasure, mine, Nitin.
So let's start with the first questions on the importance of founder agreements. Now, do the investors expect them to be in place during the due diligence process?
So initially, when this entire funding scene started a few years ago, founder agreement was not seen as a very important document.
Okay.
But eventually, as you know, it's ultimately a professional relationship and you cannot avoid disputes. You cannot predict at what point of time in a professional relationship will a dispute actually arise. Okay. Now, an investor wants to protect themselves against all these issues, whereby there's always a risk of one founder just saying, okay, now I'm quitting the company and I'm leaving. Now, to ensure all of this, founder agreement is essential, and that's where even investors now these days have been asking, to have a well-drafted founders agreement in place.
Okay.
Now, this founders agreement again needs to cover everything that the professional relationship is about. So, it could be right from setting up, how the company was incorporated, what are the roles and responsibilities of each founder, time that every founder is going to invest, all of these. So, basically, even the equity shareholding, if there's a vesting period, then the vesting period has to be covered.
Okay.
So all of these needs to be covered and it needs to be extremely detailed so that the VC, the investor, whoever is coming on board, may exactly get an idea of what the structure of the company is and what every founder is expected to do.
Okay. Great. With regards to ESOPs, what advice would you give to the founders?
So now ESOPs have always been perceived to be extremely controversial, and they are controversial.
Yeah.
Now basically ESOP represents a very significant dilution on top of whatever valuation the founders have negotiated, specifically when they're going for a fundraise.
Yeah.
ESOP also, sometimes is used as an evil trick by the VCs, to get on the valuation of the company. Hence, I believe it is crucial to know when and how much to grant ESOP. So, don't take ESOPs for granted.
Yeah.
Don't give away too much equity only because you want to save on some money. It is a key tool at your disposal to recruit and retain the kind of talent that will be required to make your startup a success. So instead of having a fixed ESOP structure, we generally advise our startup to build a realistic bottom-up equity plan for your expected hires during the financing period. And make sure that there is room to maneuver if you need more than what you think is required. So usually with ESOPs, we advise them that careful that you don't be penny wise and ESOP foolish, basically.
Okay. Is there any range within the ESOPs which the investors would be okay with?
So that's what I'm saying. So usually, if you see, look at the Indian transactions, but usually transactions in general, you see startup keeping away 10% just like that, or 5% just like that. Now, you never know if this is ever going to be utilized or no. So I would we rather suggest take it year on year. You might as well increase it, go on increasing the pool rather than keeping aside the 5% totally. So so you just have to, every startup, so that therefore there cannot be a defined percentage. There cannot be a predefined percentage because every startup has a different requirement of manpower.
Right.
Every startup has a different talent group. So it will all depend on what kind of people you want to hire. If you're looking to hire a CEO of some big company already, he might look at a bigger ESOP. So, the business plan is always clear. How much recruits are we going to have and how much ESOP we may have to part with. So, based on that planning, decide your equity rather than having a standard 10% aside.
All right. Now, as you know, founders would love to save the money and as a result, they download the agreements. So, with your expertise, why should founders be really careful while drafting the legal documents on their own?
So now basically, this is something that I always tell founders, because there's this daily negotiations that we undergo with founders. Kare bahut mehenga hai, reduce the pricing. Now, I absolutely understand that when you're working with startup, you have to be price sensitive. You cannot charge like a big corporate law firm. You cannot charge them by the minute.
Yeah.
You have to understand that, yes, cash crunch is a big challenge, and you have have to deal with it. But that does not mean that startups absolutely ignore some crucial documents. These are basically are the foundation of a good company. If you are careless about these documents, it actually reflects on how sincere you were right from the inception of your entity. Because at some point of time, there's going to be due diligence. At some point of time, there's going to be a third party. So that reflects very poorly on what kind of documents and compliances you have. Now, one thing that startups need to understand is you do not only hire a lawyer for the draft that they give you. You hire a lawyer for their analytical skills. You hire a lawyer for their technical knowledge and most importantly for their judgment about a particular issue.
Yeah.
So if you think that it's just about a draft and you don't need a further analysis to it, then I think that's the most stupidest decision that a founder would ever make.
Okay.
So I would rather say that instead of, you know, a startup might need say 10 crucial documents in its lifetime. What generally we do is we prioritize the documents, you know, they are in pre-seed age because we have to cut costs, but at the same time, we cannot compromise on the quality. So you might as well prioritize the documents. Just don't copy paste it because there cannot be generic documents and there cannot be one for all kind of documents. Your business model is different. Your vision is different. Your roadmap is different. A lawyer needs to invest time to understand all of this before a document actually is drafted.
Okay.
So I think startup founders should be very, very careful about this fact also.
Great. So how can your venture, PTA, help these startups, especially during the due diligence process?
So now whenever we have to understand the fundraising process for this. A fundraising process, you know, involves your business pitch, your project, and your meeting with the investor, your first impression, the gut feeling of the investor. Now, after all of this is done, the bigger seed breaker is the due diligence aspect. Because that is when the investor is actually going to peep in and see and check out and actually understand ki what have the founders done from the time they have started the company. How serious? Were they just worried about the business, money, finance, or they have actually taken, because business comprises of compliance, legal, tax, all of this. Now, if you can't handle all of this and you're just focused on your product and your market, then you're not an entrepreneur. And this is exactly where investor will judge you. Now, we see a lot of deals which reach the due diligence level and the founders are very optimistic, okay, they're going to raise a fund, but it never happens because the due diligence report is shabby. The red flags everywhere. So that's the reason why we feel that due diligence begins the day, you know, the process begins from the day you incorporate a company. You have to be mindful of the fact that you're going to raise a fund at some point of time and there are certain aspects which a an investor will look at when he's investing some fund.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what the size of the fund is. He will look, we will need to look. Now, when you say due diligence, there are two aspects to it. There's legal due diligence and there's finance due diligence. Legal due diligence majorly comprises of the documentation part and the finance aspect comprises of your balance sheet, P&L and compliances aspect.
Right.
So there's a master list. So when we work with the startup, we give a master list to them right in the beginning when we start working with them, because these are 150 things which you have to comply with and we have to ensure and we handhold them basically. So when they reach the due diligence stage, there are no red flags at all. There are no penalties. The TDS, the GST, everything is perfectly done. The agreements are watertight and the investor is happy.
Right.
So basically, entire handholding process is something that we take care of because we believe that founders should be more focused on the business and they should, you know, there should be this arbitrage and they should outsource people who understand this better.
Great. So we have reached at the end of this podcast.
Thank you so much. Great,
thank you.
Insight.
Pleasure
the
having mine.
Would love them. And,
I hope so. Thank you.
Lastly, I want to thank all the listeners who took their valuable time to listen to this podcast. Keep rocking, be safe, and don't forget to share.